Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be here with you all on these lovely weekends doing this show, which, you know, now I'm coming into the fifth anniversary of this show being the Silk or Joe Show, which happens at the end of this month, and maybe in celebration for that we'll be doing something special. But anyway, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, regardless of which form it's been in, because when I first started doing it, it was the Silk and Antrim Show, but then we ended up dropping that co-host Kathleen Antrim and picking me up as the co-host. But before that, it was just Jane Silk doing it all on her own, and that back then it was just called Jane, and that goes all the way back to 2013, November of that year. So, if you want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to continue, it was entirely a product of the Main Street Radio Network, you can go to mainstreetradionetwork.com, find out more about the show on there, find the app while you're at it, why not? There's a nice little app there that I made, so you know it's going to crash your phones, but anyway, because I flunked computer science, so keep that in mind when you download the app. We do have to have that, you know, standard liability warnings on there so that you don't sue us if somehow your phone breaks while you're using the app, which it shouldn't, but... You know, I'm not a computer science professional. But anyway, it's mainstreetradionetwork.com. Great resource, great website. There's also the Al Nathan Show up there as well. And podcasts for both of our shows. In case, you know, because in the app you can catch the live stream feed of the show as we're going out. But you can't really catch the podcast. You got to go to mainstreetradionetwork.com and look up the podcast page for the show. And podcasts for the Al Nathan Show, which I host several times a week as well. So if you want to know, by the way, when I host the Al Nathan Show, you can check us out on social media. Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and X at Alan Nathan. And you know what? Why not? Let's talk about the Alan Nathan website. AlanNathan.com also has podcasts for the program and has articles, op-eds, columns that the late, great Alan Nathan had written since about 2000 or so. Anyway, we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. And now for this segment, well, the rhinos are coming, hooray, hooray. The rhinos are coming, hooray, hooray. The rhinos are coming, hooray, hooray. That's right, we are talking about Jeff Cornyn and John Thune, who I've blasted all week on the Alan Nathan Show. Because right now, headline from Breitbart News in front of me, Cornyn touts support from pastors with ties to pro-amnesty Soros-linked group. That doesn't seem good. And also, one of the people that Cornyn worked with when Wesley Hunt bowed out of the race, one of the packs that Cornyn was using, just like the leader of that pack, the leader of the pack, so to speak, just went out and blasted Wesley Hunt, just absolute tore into the man. And said, oh, your campaign was just a narcissistic ego trip. Now that it's over, let's get serious. But this is Jeff Cornyn we're talking about. The only reason he's in the race is because he has a bit of an ego as well. He's a total Republican in name only, otherwise known as a rhino. And just not serving the agenda as it should be. At this point, Ken Paxton has given him an ultimatum. If you serve the agenda, particularly by... and especially to John Thune, if you all serve the agenda and get this SAVE Act passed, then I might bow out. This might all go away. This challenge to your senatorship, John Cornyn, might go... Was I calling him Jeff Cornyn on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week? I think I was calling him Jeff Cornyn. Anyway, so Ken Paxton is his rival in the Texas Republican primary. And John Thune, though, he made an interesting statement a few weeks ago. He said that if John Cornyn loses the primary, then Texas loses that seat. Or then Texas Republicans loses that seat. I guess, in a way, Texas does lose that seat because the Democrat who takes over is James Tallarico, who hates the United States, hates being white, hates Christians. Just a very hateful little spiteful man who claims to be a pastor. But anyway... So if he wins, yes, Texas does lose the seat. It's given to, I don't know, globalist asshole. Anyway, so John Thune seems to have threatened, though, that if Cornyn loses, then Thune himself will make sure that that seat goes to Democrats, which I'm not surprised. It's the same kind of tactic we have seen from Republicans like John Thune in the past, and I was very leery about him being the Senate Majority Leader when they picked him last year. Didn't think that was going to fly, especially when he decided to come out and say that he wasn't going to break with any traditional tactics or anything. He was just going to business as usual in the Senate. We're going to abide by the Senate rules as if this were 2004 instead of 2025. And as if the Democrats were going to behave themselves, as if Democrats hadn't already broken so many rules when they took power. And, you know, his excuse was, oh, it's, if we break the rules, they will. No, they already broke the rules. They already talk about breaking the rules. They say when they get power, they want to stack the Supreme Court and abolish the Electoral College, and have even talked many times of abolishing the Senate. You think these people are going to be normal and treat you well? Especially after what you saw in 2024, where vote after vote after vote after vote after vote was a tiebreaker, with Kamala Harris, the vice president, breaking the tie because the Senate Democrats and Republicans were evenly matched. If it were reverse, if it were a 50-50 split between Republicans in the Senate and Republicans and Democrats, and it was a Republican administration, you know damn well people like Thune, they wouldn't get anything done. They would just sit on their thumbs. But look at everything Democrats got done. Already, Republicans had a majority in the Senate coming into Trump's second term. They squandered it. They didn't do anything. They passed, what, the tax bill or whatever that they did that actually funded DHS as well. But that's it. That's all they got, that little budget measure. That's it. That's all you get out of it. Everything else, they are just going to stonewall recess appointments. They stonewalled Trump's recess appointments, for crying out loud. No one has done that in like 20 years. So that is the state of Democrats like John Thune, because he serves the Democrat agenda more than he does the Republican agenda. I don't know why he doesn't just flip the every name, except for the fact that he's in South Dakota, so perhaps he would not be considered electable in 2028 when he has to run again. But what's he going to run on? I ran the Senate into the ground. I'm the reason you now have a Senate majority. I'm the reason that Trump was impeached multiple times. Me, 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 I'm the reason. Is that what he plans to run on in 2028? No wonder he wants to save the SAVE Act. He probably has this political machine rigging the elections in South Dakota to keep him in power, if he's so unconcerned and unbothered. And he's out there right now saying that you have paid influencers are the only ones who care about the SAVE Act being passed, even though repeatedly polls since 2018 have shown the American people by majority want it, so much so that CNN covered those polls. Okay, you know, the same CNN that this past week was giving glowing praise towards Islamic terrorists, the ones who tried to bomb the anti-Islamic protest in New York City. Okay, that's that same CNN that loves Islamic terrorists more than American citizens. They also had to cover this, okay? So it's that big of an issue that they couldn't just cover it up. But not to John Thune, and not to his little cohort, minion, John Cornyn, that Thune is working so hard to protect. And I have to wonder if how much of the Senate race is in jeopardy, because not just from the voter apathy, but also because Cornyn himself plans to spitefully sabotage many races. What will we see from this? You know, let's go back to 2022, when the John Cornyn wing of the party, the Mitt Romney wing of the party, the Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, George Bush wing of the party, Mitch McConnell wing of the party, they sabotaged the 2022 races as well. They wanted it to be a total repudiation of Trump. They wanted to show the American people were past Trump, and we gotta go back to the corrupt Republicans like Thune, the corrupt elite that just soak up your cash and don't actually deliver on their promises. Oh, they'll make them, of course, but they won't actually do anything. They'll come up with any excuse under the sun, and even laughably in the face of Democrats showing that those are just excuses, showing that Cornyn is lying about his inability to do anything. I mean, right now he's talking about the SAVE Act as if he doesn't have methods to get it passed, and then when he's confronted with the fact that he does, he says, well, nobody wants it anyway, even though a lot of people really want it. And it's at the point where Trump, who has nothing to lose by ignoring the demands of his base at this point, is out there saying he wants the SAVE Act too, to the point where he's not going to sign any legislation from the Senate unless it's the SAVE Act. And I think honestly, I think Thune is just going to play into that and say, well, we gave all this legislation. Look at all this legislation we did, but Trump wouldn't sign it because he wants this unpopular SAFE Act out there signed. And, of course, the media is kind of helping out here. They are not covering anything about the SAFE Act whatsoever. Why would they? Because then you'd have a lot more outcry, wouldn't you? I mean, how many people out there are even aware, because the media ain't covering it, that Thune is stonewalling everything? Hopefully he has a strong primary challenger in 2028, but then, you know, that's fixing the barn door after the horse has left, because Republicans ain't going to get the Senate and probably going to lose the House, too, in the midterms this year because of Thune. And Thune wouldn't have it any other way. Neither would his little crony Cornyn. They prefer to have their little safe seats where they can soak up cash from campaign donors and not actually deliver, while making crooked backdoor deals with the Democrats and probably soaking up cash from them and their lobbyists too. That's all it's about for them. They don't give a damn about the voters. Anyway, more Alan Nathan Show after, or Silker Joe Show, I should say, after this break.
Looking for ways to save in today's housing market? For a limited time, Chase Home Lending is discounting interest rates on mortgages, including new home loans and refinances. This offer is available to all eligible homebuyers and homeowners nationwide who lock in their discounted rate now through Sunday, March 8th. During this offer period, you can access interest rate discounts that may help lower monthly payments, access equity, and make home ownership more affordable. You can also combine the rate sale with other Chase benefits for additional savings and lock in your rate for up to 90 days. Customers can get support via their mobile app, online, or in person at one of Chase's 5,000 branches nationwide. To learn more, visit chase.com/discount rate or connect with a local Chase Home Lending advisor. JPMorgan Chase N.A., member FDIC, and equal opportunity lender.
Spring break is right around the corner, and Sarasota, Florida is ready to welcome travelers with warm Gulf breezes, white sand beaches, vibrant culture, and Florida's newest destination aquarium. Kevin Cooper, Vice President for Communications and Strategic Initiatives at the Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium.
With the debut of Moat Science Education Aquarium, Sarasota now offers a window into the globally significant marine science research conducted at Moat Marine Laboratory and the perfect addition to a beach vacation. Next door, Nathan Benderson Park is the gold standard for rowing and outdoor fitness, home to an Olympic-level course, world championships, and a 3.4-mile lakefront trail where visitors can walk, run, bike, or relax in nature. Next to those two is University Town Center, meaning travelers can explore marine life in the morning, kayak or walk in the late afternoon, and enjoy 300 more shops, restaurants, and entertainment options just steps away.
For more, go to visitsarasota.com.
Hi, this is pharmacist Ray Solano with an important tip to save you money on your prescriptions. Imagine affordable medication and programs that get rid of the root cause of chronic conditions such as elevated blood sugar, blood pressure, and difficulty remembering your keys or maybe even where your car is. PD Labs Pharmacy is a special compounding pharmacy providing service, solutions, and access to on-site trained telemedicine staff available to answer your questions. Today, many people have discovered personalized prescriptions tailored to you with powerful results such as feeling better. Check out our website, pdlabsrx.com. Our nationwide coverage in 26 years in pharmacy allows us to offer medications at almost half the price of local pharmacies. Switch your pharmacy to PD Labs and experience the real service without the expensive bill. Call us at 888-909-0110. That's 888-909-0110 or pdlabsrx.com. Remember, you have a choice in healthcare.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. We are joined for this segment by Mark Kwan. He is president and founder of The Perfect Portfolio and author of Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes, Use the Buy, Borrow, Die Strategy to Get Rich and Stay Rich. Mark Kwan, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. So what do you make of this idea? It used to be that you had to go to college. To anyone who was anybody would go to college, right? And it, you know, even today you see like these baseline jobs that should have been summer internships saying you need a college degree and probably years of experience in the field as well. But at the same time, getting a college degree just doesn't seem to be profitable anymore to people. What's going on?
Well, it's the basic supply of a limit of demand, right? Too much supply reduces the demand. So college was a great idea in the 1980s. Very few people had a diploma, so the demand was in high. Once you flood the market with anyone has a college degree, it becomes worthless. And to be honest, as an employer myself, I can hire somebody. I don't look for a college degree. I look somebody that just can smart, sort of independently think, and they're just excited to learn. I think a college degree isn't worth it today.
Yeah, and also it wastes valuable time with the brain development that could be spent learning a better trade, learning something more practical than whatever might be going on in college, especially given the lack of market there is for many college degrees out there.
You know what? It's just that the teachers aren't teachers because they're good at building businesses or independently thinking. There's many of them are teachers because they're teaching, right? So, I mean, I'm not trying to say anything bad about teachers, but personally, I'm a high school and college dropout. I kind of knew that school was kind of teaching me to think a certain way, do what you're told, save money, get good credit, put money in a retirement account so you can retire one day. Now, that's just horrible advice, right? So I went to college for a little bit for business, and it was amazing. They line you up and they give you your student loans and credit cards, and then you sit in classes, listen to professors, and most of the people didn't use it. So I kind of, my opinion, I agree with Charlie Kirk. Colleges are pretty much a scam these days.
Right, and with also the exorbitant fees that they charge you, knowing that the government is backing the student loans, so even if you get out of college, you can't pay it back because you can't get a job. And there, as you said, there's so many college degrees out there on the market these days that it's very unlikely you will get a job. You know, colleges don't care how much they charge because they have it packed. They don't care that you're not going to get a job afterwards. So at that point, you know, what vested interest do they have in you as a student?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mentioned this. My first book was written my first book was actually published in 2014. So my first book, and I talked about this even back then. I said, like, I wouldn't go to college. Find a company that you want to work for. When you get out of high school, knock on their door and say, look, hire me in the mailroom. Just get my foot in the door. I'll outwork everybody. And, employer would absolutely hire somebody like that if they're eager to learn. They can learn on the job. But by the time the other guy's getting out of school with a four-year degree, he's probably making $200,000 a year running the company. You know what I mean? So it's just smart employers hire on eagerness and willing to learn. They don't hire based on a diploma. In fact, they've done studies on this. The 4 years in education reduces independent thought and critical thinking, for that matter.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's doing the job it's supposed to be doing, since originally, at least, the concept of college was you would go to learn how to think better, but now it seems you go to learn how not to think.
Very much, yeah. I remember the original design of schools was in the Industrial Revolution, when they put schools in place to create a dependency. It was reduce independent thought. It was do what you're told. Show up, clock in, clock out, and here, your pension plan is going to pay for your retirement, so stop thinking and just do what you're told. That was the point of schooling, was to make people dependent and obedient, right? So, the fact is that, college is, this, in my opinion, is just an extension of that. But the problem is, you're paying $100,000 a year to do that over 4 years, and you can't accept that date. So the teachers and administrators, and there's so much cost for administration, they have an incentive to encourage you to stay there for longer to dig themselves in debt to pay their salaries, that's a strong incentive to not do what's right for the students.
Right, and then you have all those colleges, I think it's Harvard University, that's sitting on billion-dollar endowments, and they just, I don't know why they just sit on them, because other universities will build a new parking garage or a new stadium with the inflated tuition rates. So a lot of it just seems to be not about diverting any of that fund back to the students, but rather expanding the university so they can cram in more students and get more money from outside sources, such as sports deals.
Very much, yeah. College isn't about education. It's really a business, you know, and these endowments are crazy. So why would a college that has, you know, massive endowment still be not-for-profit? It's a little bit of a conflict of interest for sure.
Now, one interpretation I've seen is that when people graduate college, you see all these jobs that say college degree required, even though clearly it shouldn't be, that there's some sort of elitism, like in HR departments perhaps, where these people say, well, I have a college degree, therefore that should be the minimum requirement. Or perhaps they're adding more requirements there than necessary because they need to make themselves feel like that their job is more important.
Absolutely. It's the liberal ideology that they teach us in college and universities. They go, well, in order to hire somebody, I have to make sure that they go to get a degree. So they have to go $100,000 in debt. Then they sit in the chair and then they force everybody else to do it. It's just this weird system where, you know, they go, well, you got to have a PhD to work here. Well, that's really nice. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's why entrepreneurs like myself, we don't waste time in school. We just go out in the world and learn, and we learn to work with people, and we build companies, right? And then we hire people that are smart. We don't hire people with diplomas. Sometimes I look at people with a diploma. I don't want to hire them because there's this, like, expectation, like, oh, I have a diploma, you're going to pay me more. I'd rather hire some young person who doesn't have a diploma, who's just willing to work their butt off and learn, right? That person may do much better with the company because they don't have the expectation.
Yeah, that's a lot of the rhetoric around college hasn't really caught up to the reality of college. You know, we're still being told stuff that they were told, you know, 40 years ago about college. You go, you're going to probably get a white-collar job afterwards. So go ahead, go get yourself in debt. And it seems that that's not going to change because of just how profitable it is, as we were just talking about, the college industry.
Yeah, people don't know what they're getting into. Kids go, you know, they sit down in college, they sign a piece of paper going, oh, student loans. They don't realize that they can never default on these loans. These aren't credit cards where you can file bankruptcy or something. This is going to follow you forever, right? You can't buy a home now because it sits on your credit. It's horrible, right? So technically, the universities and colleges are just burying these kids in debt, and it's going to make it very, very difficult to get ahead, right? So worse than that, I'm in the financial literacy business. Everything we've ever been taught since we were a kid about finances, even in colleges and universities, it comes from Wall Street and big government. If people just sit there and you know, expect to learn something that was provided by big government to make you financially free, like save money, get good credit, pay your taxes, get a good job, put money in a retirement account, that's all there to make sure you're not doing well. Retirement accounts weren't created to retire you. They were there to keep you working. You know, I work in the financial industry, so it's indoctrination. It's not education.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Cron, appreciate you being on the show. We've got about 10 seconds left. Where can the listeners get a copy of your book, Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes?
Amazon, best place, and our website is theperfectportfolio.com. So Amazon for Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, got more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
This wasn't random. Whoever did this wants to send a message. He's preparing.
What's the flavor of psychopath we're dealing with here?
Someone who craves power and control.
Worship me. Your souls are ready.
That's a clip from season 2 of NBC's hit series, The Hunting Party, a crime procedural about a team of investigators who track down and capture the most dangerous killers the world has ever seen, all of whom have just escaped from the pit, a top-secret government prison. On tonight's episode, multi-Emmy Award winner Kelsey Grammer guest stars as cult leader and serial killer Noah Cyrus. With the clock ticking, a former FBI profiler played by Melissa Roxburgh and her team raise races to stop Cyrus's enigmatic plans, but soon discover that not everything is as it seems. Don't miss The Hunting Party, tonight at 10 p.m., 9 central on NBC.
At Culver's, we believe the best meals are shared with the ones you love most. Creating lasting memories and celebrating traditions doesn't have to be complicated. It can be as simple as spending time with your friends and family at a local restaurant. We're proud to share our take on the classic Wisconsin fish fry with our guests. Our North Atlantic cod and butterfly jumbo shrimp are perfect for satisfying any seafood craving. These crispy, flavorful menu items are cooked to order for the freshest taste and sure to make your family dinners this season extra memorable. We value serving our guests with hospitality. You can feel confident your family will be served a meal made with the same care and quality you would expect from a home-cooked meal. At Culver's, it's our tradition to treat every guest like family. This season, order ahead on Culver's.com or the Culver's app to get a taste of your fish fry favorites.
Volkswagen introduced a bold new ad campaign during the big game last Sunday, a reimagined version of the iconic Drivers Wanted. The new campaign invites a new generation to embrace individuality, curiosity, and saying yes when opportunity calls. Rachel Zaluzic, Volkswagen's SVP of Customer Experience and Brand Marketing.
Now is the perfect moment to remind our enthusiasts why they love Volkswagen and to welcome others to join in. Drivers Wanted is more than a message. It's an invitation to take the wheel and experience the freedom and fun on the road.
The commercial, a callback to the brand's popular Drivers Wanted ads from the 90s, reminds people that on the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. It's a nod to the original era of Drivers Wanted, reimagined for a new audience with the same spirit and energy. To view the campaign film, The Great Invitation, and maybe find yourself in a Volkswagen of your own, visit VW.com.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. And we are joined for this segment by Kirk Couchman. He's a senior fellow in fiscal policy at Americans for Prosperity. He previously served with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And relevant to this segment, he's author of Fiscal Democracy in America, How a Balanced Budget Amendment Can Restore Sound Governments. Kirk Couchman, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Well, hey, Joe. Thanks for having me back.
Yep, glad to have you. So we've got this balanced budget amendment that's due next week. What's it looking like?
Yeah, the House of Representatives is scheduled to vote on a new kind of balanced budget amendment next week. This will be the first time that either House of Congress has ever voted on one that wouldn't require annual balance, but would instead require balance over the medium term, and that has a lot of great features. So we're excited to see that coming to the floor. We're hoping for a strong bipartisan vote, but given how things are these days, we'll have to see.
Yeah, it seems that both sides tend to use the debt ceiling as a political tool to whip the other side. So realistically, would they give up that kind of power?
Yeah, this actually doesn't have anything to do with the debt limit directly. This doesn't have a provision that would put the debt limit in the Constitution. It would control spending relative to revenue, which would, of course, address the debt. But the statutory debt limit is a whole different issue. But I think one of the things that has been lost in this conversation about BBAs is how normal they are, balance rules are, around the world and in the States. Basically, all have them, all the European countries. It's just the U.S., Canada, South Korea, and Turkey that don't. And then all but one of the states has a balanced budget rule. Most of them are constitutional with support in regular statutes as well. So it's a totally normal thing to do. The question is really just how do you design them so that you get the best possible results?
Well, how did we end up going for 250 years now? Why is it our 250th anniversary where we suddenly come up with a balanced budget amendment? How come that never came up before?
Yeah, I mean, Thomas Jefferson wrote about how he wished that it would be possible for Congress to pass an amendment just to take away the power of borrowing. And part of the reason that he wanted that was because it would reduce the chance of wars, which are, of course, very expensive. But we didn't really have a chronic borrowing problem until the Great Depression in the 1930s. And that's when the balanced budget amendment was born. I talk about that in my book that you mentioned. And then the issue kind of grew and grew and grew, but the problem was that it was all based on the idea that the budget has to be balanced every single year, and that's not a good idea because revenue is so volatile. It jumps around so much from year to year that if you tried to link up spending and revenue every single year, it would just be a nightmare to chase that ever-fluctuating revenue thing around. So it wasn't until the last 15 years that we had other balanced budget amendment concepts that were based on balancing over the business cycle, balancing over the medium term, being just principles-based so that Congress could fill in the details with regular legislation that could change as we learn better ways of doing things. So now that that door has been opened and Congress is going to vote on a BBA that is more like that, then we can have a real conversation about what it will take to get the right language that can get that broad bipartisan support that you need to amend the Constitution.
Yeah, because I'm sure neither party wants to be the party that presides over, bankruptcy or continuous budget struggles, especially given mm-hmm. how tumultuous the economy has been, you know, not just throughout Trump's term so far, but also throughout the Biden administration preceding it. And it seems like since COVID, we just never really had a chance to recover our footing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and even before that, like, there is so much waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal budget. You've seen the stories. It's horrible. And there's probably hundreds of billions of dollars that could be saved by going after that. The problem is Congress doesn't have the tools. It doesn't have a balanced budget requirement to really put the squeeze on the nonsense. It also doesn't have a budget process that allows members working through the committees they serve on to say, hey, what if we move money from this nonsense to something that actually adds value for the American people? So it's not just about balance and sustainability. It's also about getting members of Congress to actually be able to represent their constituents and drive better policy value for the people.
It never seemed to me to be, as far as Congress goes, about policing the committees they're on, just because, you know, the more money that the part of the government that you oversee, the more employees that it has, the stronger your committee and thus the stronger your position. So what incentive is there for a congressman who's, you know, chair of this committee overseeing this section of government that has all this money coming in to actually cut any waste there? Rather, there is incentive for him to yell about waste in other parts of the government because that shrinks them, mm-hmm. thus leaving him with a bigger slice of the government that he's in charge of. But then shrinking his own slice, what incentive is there?
Yeah, that's actually the biggest challenge that we face. But there are a lot of programs that would just be totally gored if we had a debt crisis, which is what we're on track to do. And so if you think about the Armed Services Committee, you know, they preside over almost $1 trillion a year in terms of the authorizing side. And then the Defense Appropriations Committee covers the actual outlays of most of that. But The point is that we're going to pull back from the rest of the world if we get into a debt crisis, and the things that they care about will be impacted. So they have an interest in making sure that we have budget sustainability for the long run. And then on the Ways and Means Committee in the House and the Senate Finance Committee that has jurisdiction over the entire tax code and many of the major spending programs, like, they want opportunities to matter as legislators and put their thumbprint on history. So the ability to manage these programs within reasonable budget guardrails is appealing to them, because they can't really have the empowerment to do stuff unless it's within some boundaries. So they get a little bit, but it's constrained. So that's what gives them the desire to want to move towards a balanced budget and actually manage their programs for better value.
Hmm. Well, I certainly hope so. Our government has a track record of not acting until the problem is upon it, and that just seems to be, you know, the byproduct perhaps of the American people's attention spans. You know, we're jumping from crisis to crisis to crisis as the media carries us on throughout the year. So it just doesn't seem like, you know, we're going to stop and say, hey, let's look at this long-term issue when, you know, right now we have Iran before us, when last month it was ICE, when next month it'll be the midterms.
Yeah, absolutely. And the truth is that there's always going to be things that come up, and you have to deal with them, but you also have to do the blocking and tackling that is part of governance. And a balanced budget amendment is a big part of focusing the minds on what do we need to do, and then how do things flow downstream from there, so that we can keep doing the things that the federal government is supposed to be doing, and not do the things that the states or the private sector or maybe nobody should be doing at all. But yeah, that's kind of the challenge. You have to be able to respond to things, but you also have to be able to do the normal stuff that is expected and required.
Now, with the balanced budget amendment, again, the vote's coming up next week, and if it ends up being successful, ends up being on Trump's desk and signed, I mean, what are the next steps? Obviously, this isn't going to be the end-all, be-all solution for the budget. So what would you like to see after it?
Yeah, and just to touch on that, the process a little bit, constitutional amendments require two-thirds in both houses of Congress, and then they go to state legislatures typically to be approved, and it takes three-fourths of state legislatures to do that. So in both Congress and state legislatures, you really need broad bipartisan support. Like, if all Republicans were to vote for a constitutional amendment, you need at least a third of Democrats, roughly speaking. And then if you were to have a balanced budget requirement, and then members of Congress were like, okay, now we have to do this thing, how do we make it possible? The number one thing that they need to do is actually do a real budget. Right now, the appropriations process, the 12 bills that everybody's talking about right now, including the Department of Homeland Security appropriations, where that's currently shut down, that's only a quarter of spending. And it's not the part of spending that's growing fastest. That is health care and pensions and interest costs. Those three things are not in the appropriations bills. And then there's the entire tax code, and there's $1 trillion to $2 trillion a year of spending through the tax code, all the tax credits and that sort of thing. So we need Congress to be managing the entire budget, and then that will provide a lot of the natural incentives to make all the deals that we're going to need to get on our path to balance and then stay in balance over the long run. So a real budget, I know it sounds like the simplest thing in the world, but Congress is used to doing this appropriations process, and kind of getting them to make that mental leap from, oh, well, we do the 12 bills every year, saying, no, you should do the entire budget involving all the committees, all the members, and do it every year. And then you can really get going with delivering results for people.
Yeah, lately Congress has seemed to have an affinity for massive omnibus bills, so that could be an easier leap at this point than other points in history.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want an omnibus bill. The defining feature of an omnibus bill, as we've seen, is that a handful of members of leadership and the White House, maybe the top appropriators, cook something up, and then they jam the rest of the members with that, and you don't get a chance to even read it before you have to vote on it. You don't get a chance to amend anything for sure. And so that's not a healthy system. We actually want a bottom-up Congress that is able to say, hey, this isn't right. What if we did this instead? And so any member can bring something up in the committee they serve on or on the floor and be able to have those challenge conversations that, you know, will make budgeting better. We don't want the traditional omnibus. We want something that is so much better.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Just like we don't want the traditional budgeting process, we want something that's so much better. But Kirk Couchman, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show. Again, listeners, he's author of Fiscal Democracy in America, How a Balanced Budget Amendment Can Restore Sound Governments, and also senior fellow in fiscal policy at Americans for Prosperity. We have about 10 seconds left. Where can we find more of your work?
Well, you can find me on X and LinkedIn. I'm the only Kirk Couchman that I've seen there, so I'm pretty easy to find.
All right, listeners, that's something for you to check out coming up to the break, but more Silk or Joe Show on the other side.
Adult growth hormone deficiency, or GHD, is a rare disorder caused by decreased or lost growth hormone production. About 6,000 new U.S. cases are diagnosed annually, though it often goes underdiagnosed and undertreated. GHD can be caused by brain tumors or head injuries, congenital defects, or surgical or radiation damage. Adults with GHD can face a wide array of symptoms. Skytrofa, Lanipeg Somatropin TCGD, is FDA approved to treat adult GHD. Lanipeg Somatropin is a prodrug of somatropin, or human growth hormone, administered as a once-weekly injection.
This is Dr. Lisa Abbott, a board-certified endocrinologist. For over 25 years, daily injection of somatropin has been the standard of care for adult growth hormone deficiency. Yet the burden of daily injections is thought to be a reason why patients do not follow their treatment regimens. For patients who look for a less burdensome treatment regimen, Skytrofa, with its once weekly injection, may help improve adherence.
Skytrofa is a prescription medicine for the treatment of growth hormone deficiency in adults and children 1 year and older who weigh at least 26 pounds, 11 and a half kilograms. Don't take Skytrofa if you are allergic to Skytrofa or any of its ingredients. If you have a critical illness caused by certain types of heart or stomach surgery, trauma, or breathing problems, if you have eye problems caused by diabetes, if you have cancer or other tumors, if you are a child with closed bone growth plates, or if you are a child with Prader-Willi syndrome who is severely obese or has breathing problems, Skytrofa may cause increased blood sugar levels, increased risk of growth of an existing tumor or cancer, or increased risk of a previous tumor or cancer returning, increased pressure in the skull, hip and knee pain or a limp in children, slipped capital femoral epiphysis, which may lead to bone tissue dying due to lack of blood supply, osteonecrosis, worsening of curvature of the spine in children, scoliosis, severe and constant stomach pain, which could be a sign of pancreatitis, and loss of fat and tissue weakness at the injection site. Hormone levels should be monitored during treatment. Tell your doctor all medical conditions and medicines you take. Common side effects in children include viral infection, fever, cough, nausea, and vomiting. Common side effects in adults include swelling due to fluid buildup and low thyroid hormone. Talk to your doctor to see if Skytrofa is right for you. Please visit skytrofa.com/AGHD. That's skytrofa.com/AGHD for full prescribing information and to learn more. Or call 1-844-442-7236. This is brought to you by Ascendis Pharma Endocrinology, Inc.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy
It's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Appreciate you sticking with us through this hour of the show. And we're wrapping up now. Just me here, nothing else. Talking about stuff that I've seen in the news. And, I just got this Breitbart headline in front of me. Radical New Jersey candidate. Toilets are socialism. Jesus was a democratic socialist. I lost my entire train of thought during the end of the break because I clicked on that. What the hell are you saying? Toilets are socialism? But anyway, it was, she's just a lunatic, but what do you expect from Democrats? And it's a sad state that we're in, that the party is, you know, absolutely nuts with their anti-Trump hatred. It's like, you know, the moment Trump decides something is good, they decide it must not be. I look at immigration, for example. There's all these people saying, well, Obama deported 3 million people, ICE killed 56 people. Democrats did not care at that time. But now that Trump's doing it, he's not even doing it to the degree Obama did it, but suddenly he's bad for it. And also, according to Breitbart, there's 19 million people illegally in the country now. I assume the number is probably higher. That's just the 19 million they could figure out. Study illegal migrant population, almost 19 million. That's the headline. And it's coming from Federation for American Immigration Reform, who came up with that. I guess it's their estimate. But since December 2020, we've grown by 4.1 million illegal immigrants to around 19 million or so in the country, according to, again, this estimate from the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Now, that's a lot of people illegally in this country. And I think that's just part of the Democrat strategy, was to bloat the problem to the point where you look inhumane when you have to do mass deportations like this in order to get them all out, when you have to really dig into communities the way ICE has been doing. And especially since Democrats are out there protecting these people from deportation. And this is not something Democrats would have been in favor of, say, at least on paper, say 20 years ago, when they're on the Senate floor demanding various means of preventing illegal immigration. We have Obama and Dick Durbin, the big proponents of open borders today, back in 2006, were out there saying that we need more than just a wall. Wall isn't enough. It's great, but we need more than a wall. Joe Biden was out there saying that. Look what happened under his administration. The only reason they even built a wall in the Biden administration is after massive outcry and a humanitarian disaster. And even at that, they wasted American taxpayer money building parts of a wall just because the parts were already built, but they were built by Trump and they didn't want to be associated with Trump. So they built something else just to make it look like that they weren't copying Trump. And again, that cuts right down to the core, doesn't it? They tried to do what was necessary and right, but they didn't want it to be like Trump. The only reason they were delaying and dithering was it couldn't look like it was something Trump would do. It couldn't look like anything he had done. Had to be different, otherwise the Democrat base would have slaughtered the Democrat administration, which they kind of did with the way the 2024 election turned out, with a bunch of Democrats leaving the party to begin with. But that's just what this anti-Trump attitude has done. And we're seeing that with Iran now, where, you know, for years, well, actually, first we saw it with Venezuela. Trump took out Maduro, right? Well, Democrats said, how dare you? How could you? This is terrible. This is awful. It's a sovereign country, blah, blah, blah. Yet, in the Biden administration, they had like a $20 million bounty on Maduro's head. That was acceptable, but actually doing something about him is not. Again, why are the Democrat voters okay with a $20 million bounty on Maduro's head, but they're not okay when Maduro is finally captured and arrested as the bounty required that they wanted? It doesn't make much sense, does it? unless you consider, oh, they just don't like it because Trump did it. Trump derangement syndrome is the technical term for this, and it's not just Democrats either. It's Republicans. John Thune, for example. John Cornyn, for example. Tom Tillis, for example. They all seem to be victims of this Trump derangement syndrome. Certainly Liz Cheney and late of the Republican Party, Adam Kinzinger, were. I mean, Kinzinger committed career suicide over Trump derangement syndrome. That's how nutso he went about the matter. Career suicide. He actually threw himself down on that January 6th committee, gave some fake tears. He thought, oh boy, this will bring me so much praise and love, and I'm just going to win all the elections. And then the Democrats stabbed him in the back when it came time for him to be reelected, because Ohio got redistricted. He was in a district that was now more Democrat than Republican, and I guess he was just kind of hoping, hey, maybe when I prostrated myself before the January 6th committee and proselytized before it, that perhaps they will show mercy and vote me in. Nope, he's thrown out. He's a nobody now. Nobody cares. The only reason that anyone even knows his name today isn't because of anything he's done, it's today, but rather what he did, what, 4 years ago now? And and he's only mentioned with hatred and disrespect and spit by Republicans, and I'll know fake praise by Democrats who actually couldn't care less if he lived or died. And look at Liz Cheney. She got bounced out of the party again because they just let their Trump derangement syndrome get away with them. Now, what would make someone so just lunatic? I mean, I spent all week trying to, on the Alan Nathan show, trying to get into John Thune's head. Why are you such a psychopath? Why are you willing to destroy the GOP over the SAVE Act? What is it that's in your mind? I just assumed corruption. I just assumed perhaps that he is either getting elected because of things that the SAVE Act would abolish, or he is being bribed by people who are getting elected by things that the SAVE Act would abolish, like the Democrat Party, for example. And perhaps, you know, he has some lobbyists coming at him, too. You know, when he comes out and says, it's only paid influencers who are demanding the SAVE Act, perhaps it's only paid influencers like him who are against the SAVE Act. And also politicians like the Democrats whose jobs rely on fraudulent voting. And, you know, but perhaps it's not any of that. Perhaps it's not that. Perhaps it's not corruption of any kind. Perhaps John Thune just hates Trump. And that's it. Is willing to destroy the GOP in order to spite Trump. In order to say, again, as they did in 2022, as I mentioned in the opening segment, this is a repudiation of Trump. We did not win the midterms because of Trump and nothing else. And maybe he's willing to die on that hill to try and bring the party back to the same old GOP that kept losing elections and soaking up your cash. So I guess that ultimately, in the end, his Trump derangement syndrome is about corruption. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Silker Joe Show. Appreciate you all tuning in, as always, on your weekends or whenever you decide to catch it, perhaps during the week to catch up on it. Anyway, don't forget to check out MainStreetMediaNetwork.com, our website. Check out the app, too, if you have an Android phone, because that's the only phone it's for. Very expensive to do an iPhone app. And also, we are on social media, Facebook, Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and X at Al and Nathan, in case you want to see when I host that show, which this past week was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.